From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Good Games Hobart and their new Endgame Cafe.
The Dice Men Cometh!
I've been enjoying another very quiet and peaceful week because Dice Man Trent has been on holidays out of the state.
Hasn't it been lovely?
It has been so nice. And Adelaide has had to put up with his whinging and whining and bleating and
just everything.
Whinging.
I've been sleeping so well.
But hey.
But it did get its revenge by causing him several hours of flight delays.
Excellent. It's The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, sponsored by Good Games and the Endgame Cafe. It is games for gamers by gamers, now with added comics and food. And guys, what is coming up on the show tonight?
Well, tonight is a very simple show for us, which is good because we are simple guys. I'm Garth, you're Leon, he's Mark. It is episode 157 on the 16th of March, guys.
Woo!
It's already halfway through the month. And Leon, you are going to kick us off with a little bit of what we have all been playing this week. And then after that, we just left it wide open to talk about the good, the bad and the ugly that came from the 11th annual Golden Geek Awards. So, should we go back to a song and then come back with Carnage? Is that what we're going to do, Mark?
Carnage!
Thank you. You are with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
We have to wait till the sting runs out, though.
The sting has... Oh, Mark, we miss Trent.
Yeah.
Trent knows how to...
Oh, that's right. He knows how to press things. Oh, why do we slag him off? He'll never come back.
And on that note, we'll go to that song.
That was weird because that song apparently still has 17 seconds to go.
Well, it is quite appropriate that it finished early because that song was called Erectile Dysfunction by The Nation Blue.
Oh, we're so bad at this.
Oh, dear.
I was going to make a joke about Mark always putting thematic songs on before of what we've been playing, but that just beat me to it. Which is anyway, you are with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. We are getting a little bit better, Leon, so don't shake your head there, but we are very proudly... More pity to them. We are sponsored by Good Games Hobart and the new cafe, Endgame Cafe, which is Hobart's only licensed board game dedicated cafe, which we love.
Could you pull a sponsorship mid-show? Could they do that? Do they have that power? Is that in the clause? Anyway.
Let's not encourage them.
Okay.
Anyway, Leon, let's talk about Carnage!
Okay. I will talk about Carnage. Just thought I'd switch it up there for a bit. So, Carnage by Devil Pig Games, who are famous for their Heroes of Normandy games and the upcoming Age of Towers, which is a weird words to say, Age of Towers.
That is kind of like just Scrabble, Yahtzee with words, isn't it? Doesn't make much sense.
I thought upcoming was weirder.
I didn't say... whatever. Anyway, so Carnage is a fun, fast and violent card game.
Carnage!
Yeah, that's not going to get old at all.
No.
For 2 to 5 warriors, or actually 6 if you have the expansion. So in the base game, there are 4 factions you can pick from, and there are 2 extra ones that came with the Kickstarter edition that my assumption is will be for sale later. You have the Celestial Order, the humans.
Yeah,
you have boring. The infamous Raiders, the orcs. You have the Vengeful Legion, the dwarves. You have the Bloody Swarm. The goblins.
Yeah, okay.
You have the Dark Rampage. Just the undead.
Okay.
And then you have the Devil Pigs, who are the Devil Pigs.
Yeah.
So those ones are the same. They don't get a special
name. So you have the Stereotypes of War.
Yeah, give or take. But the art's really cool, so it's fine. So your goal of Carnage is to take control of something very special, something very strategic, astoundingly beautiful, and the envy of all nations.
Am I really the prize?
No, it is a hill.
Ugh.
Yep, just a hill. Admittedly, a nice hill. And it may be very commanding with its view of all the surroundings. It may not. You just don't know until you take it. All you know is that you want to take that hill, and there are lots of armies there to try and stop you from doing it.
Oh, boy.
So you want to crush them with all the mayhem and bloodshed as possible.
And that will be basically how you spend the next hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, an hour and a half for us, it's 30 minutes if you play it proper. So, the way this game works, it's very simple. It's only supposed to take, like, half an hour, but we stretch it out a bit because, you know, we like a drink. We like a drink and a chat. So everybody on their turn will simultaneously pick a strategy card from their hand. Each player has about I think it's about 8 strategy cards or so, and there's 4 rounds in the game, so you only actually pick 4 of them. And on these strategy cards, they will tell you how many reinforcements you will get for the round, as well as there is a number on it, and they will determine the player order. And we all the people playing will put them down face down and then reveal them, and then you'll all go in player order.
Yes. And that immediately is just a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
Because all of the different races that are in this game all have different numbers of legions or soldiers or whatever.
Yeah.
But they also don't have the same number on those cards.
No. So there's no 2 numbers in the whole deck.
Yeah, so there's never the chance where if you and I are playing Leon that we're both going to play that same strategy to get the first player, because one of us will have a number that's different to the others.
And spoilers for what's ahead when we chat, this isn't a very difficult game. It's very simple. There's not heaps to do. But picking these cards is one of the most important things of the game, because whether you want to go first or you want to go last very much depends on the armies that are on the field, especially from the round before when a little bit of murdering happened.
Yes.
So once you do that and decide the way it goes, then the players will draw all their reinforcements from the top of their deck. Some cards will have special symbols on them, which will allow players to attack and do stuff straight away, as well as bring out some more units. And then once all those reinforcements are out, based on the symbols again that are on the cards, you will do your attacking round. There is melee attacks, which in, say, a 4-player game, you can only attack players on your left or right. If there is a ranged attack, you can attack anyone on the field. If there is a magic attack, they count for both. So magic symbols count for you use them during your melee attacks and you use them during your ranged attacks. And then there are some other lots of different special symbols. Every faction has different symbols of different abilities and stuff they can do. And then you go about it. So when you attack a player's front line. Now, I haven't explained that yet, that each army has 3 lines of soldiers that they have. Front line, middle line, and back line. And as you would imagine, the front line are more your grunts and kind of your damage takers, and then your back line are more where your archers and your leaders and stuff are. But it doesn't really matter. All that matters is the kind of the goons at the front get attacked first.
Yeah, they're the ones who are going to be doing the most dying.
Yeah, very sadly, they're the ones, because you have to wipe them out before you can get to all the rest of them, which I think is fun. And one of the cool things about this is you have all these cards in front of you, which is, the art is awesome, by the way. And they're all different kinds of units doing different various things. You can have, say, 20 different cards in your army, and you think, this is brilliant. And then someone will choose to attack you on their turn, and very quickly, they'll all be gone.
And it will be opposite of brilliant. Yeah. And this is the thing, because when you do the setup, it's kind of the only time where you're going to have
4 big armies.
Four big armies. They are very, very, very quickly going to just completely disappear, which then brings you to the first episode of Carnage!
Now, Leon, you did mention that you have to attack the front line, but are you remembering there's that second type of attacking where you're doing your ranged attack, which not every unit can do, but then you can attack anyone, can't you? That's what
I
remember.
No. You can attack any player. You still have to attack the front line, though.
Oh, really? I thought the whole point of the arrows was you could shoot over the back.
No.
Mark was cheating, was he?
Evidently.
No.
But yes, no, you can only actually attack the people left or right of you. So in a 3-player game, you can attack anybody. 1-2-player game, you can attack anybody. But in 4-player game, only the people left or right to you, except for the range.
But on that note, it is a great little variant that as soon as the army to your immediate left or right, as soon as that one is destroyed, which will happen, and it will happen a lot, the player that then is then one further away is assumed to be to your immediate. So you can basically melee your way around the table should your army be big and bad enough.
Yeah, so your army could get completely annihilated, but luckily enough, on your turn, when you get reinforcements out, it will build up very quickly, especially if you start drawing cards or playing your special leader card, which you can play once per game, which gives you more reinforcements, you build up a big old army yet again. So it's not that big a deal when you get destroyed. But what happens when you get destroyed, lads? this is the fun bit.
Carnage!
Yes, indeed, carnage. So each time a player totally destroys an opponent's army, they must yell,
Carnage!
Carnage. Loud. Loud and clear. And then they take a carnage token, which is one worth 1 domination point. Victory point. Let's not screw around with names.
Why is it not a carnage point?
Oh, I don't know, but it's called 1 domination point. And then the other players, this is something we didn't do because, well, I didn't read it in the rules. The other players must then cheer very loudly, yeah, once this happens, because if they don't, they lose one of their carnage tokens that they gained previously. We didn't do this the other night, but if we play it again tonight, we're going to do that.
And look, I mean, people in the pub we were playing at were looking over our way anyway, What the fuck?
Yes, and we
imagine if we were cheering.
And we did have, we did put a video up on Instagram of Carl doing just that. This is a game. This goes to show, again, spoilers, how in fun this game is, that Carl is not the sort to play these kind of games. And oh, did he ever ball, especially the fact that he won and slaughtered all of us.
Oh, I slaughtered some of us. Some of us lost by one carnage point. Yeah. Some of us didn't, Leon.
I got absolutely annihilated. But yeah, so that's the way they actually win the game is that at the end of each round, everyone counts up the amount of units that they killed from their opponents. And whoever has the most gets a certain number of points. If you have the most, you get 5. The next person gets 3, then 2. And they add on top of those carnage points.
And then, Leon,
points.
You get 0? Is that right?
Most of the time, yeah, I got 0. I think I got 1 once, maybe.
Okay.
What sort of points are they, Gar?
Carnage points!
No, they're not. They're domination points.
That's my variant.
That's what it says in the rules. And that's pretty much the game. There's not a lot you'd really do. The cards pretty much play themselves, but oh, it's fun.
Oh, magic. There's magic.
Well, there is magic.
Oh, no. What there is rounding up.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Look, one of the things I really like about this game is that when it is your turn and you've managed to get your army together and it is your, let's just say, your melee attacking, you get to count up all your numbers and go, okay, well, I'm attacking for 20 points.
Yep.
I can choose to attack the player to my left for 20 points or the player to my right for 20 points or split it. And it has to be always an even split, so 10 and 10.
Mm.
However, if I've got an attack value of 19 and I choose to split, it allows you to round up so that I'm doing 10 and 10. Oh, how refreshing is that to happen? It just never happens that I get a little bit of something for nothing.
It sounds so silly, but it is so refreshing to have to round up instead of round down. It's so stupid. Like, you could so easily base a game off, I tell you what, we'll just give them slightly fewer points, like per whatever the action may be, but we'll allow them to round up from time to time and it'll put a smile on their face. But by God, does it work.
So look, I mean, there's another thing, and look, from a thematic sense, the hill that we're apparently fighting for, which is a little square card in the middle of the table,
which is where all the dead bodies go,
is cool, because again, you just see this stack of dead warriors go up and up and up, because it's the central cards for all of the players, so it gets a pretty high stack pretty quickly.
Yep.
But again, it's just a bit of fun. It serves no real purpose apart from a card collection.
Now, look, I am excited to get to some of the expansions, Leon, because
yes.
We only had one card or two cards that came out.
Yes.
Of those units that are more than one card.
Yes.
There was a giant, wasn't it?
In the Orc army, they have a default giant.
Yeah.
Ted McStampy or something was his name?
It was quite literally that. And Garth used him to great effect.
Oh, he was an insta-kill guy.
It's a really cool thing in the deck, because when you turn over the card, because he's like, as Mark just said, there's two different cards that make up this one big nasty monster. But when you flip him over in the deck, say it was just his legs, if you do that, you then get to look through the rest of your deck to find the rest of him.
Yep.
So all it takes is one card to get this big old nasty beast out, and once you add in the expansions, which from the Kickstarter, I've got many different ones, all the different factions now have different units, as well as they all have these multiple card beasts and whatnot. Speaking of which, there is an expansion that I got with the game that I'm guessing is going to be sold later called Tricks and Mercenaries. They add two things. There's a deck of cards, which is mercenaries. So throughout the game, what you can do is when you play your strategy cards, there will be little flags on the end which have a black flag on them. And what that means is this round you can play your leader card if you want, which is a special big nasty bad that you keep in your hand. When those cards get played, so that's only once per game. But with a mercenary deck, every time you play a strategy card that has the black symbol on there, instead of playing your leader, you can choose to pick a card from the mercenary deck and play it as well.
Yeah.
So each game I could have, and there's things like there's the cow centaurs and just all these sorts of utter madness. Like I could have them one game, Garth could have them the next game if they're in the deck, you just don't know. So stuff like that adds a bit of extra variety.
There is only one thing better than carnage, and that's carnage for money!
Yeah, everyone does enjoy that. And then there is the Tricks, which is basically a little event deck, and every round you flip over one and it kind of changes the way the game plays that turn. Like everyone gets an extra melee round or, archers don't work this round or something like that. Just an extra bit of something to add a bit more variety to it.
Yeah.
Like the event deck for Small World or something like that.
It's exactly the same.
It basically just changes it up
as
it goes around. Look, I got to say, when I saw this game, I was like, oh boy, here we go. And I had, and I was dreading what Carl was going to think, because Carl's, the resident Euro snoot. And So I had a ball with this.
Yeah.
Carl had an absolute ball with this. And again, it was one of those ones where it didn't really matter that I was winning or losing. I couldn't really tell for most of the game. And I ended up
losing.
Yeah. Not as badly as me. Okay. Don't you worry about that.
But is that an achievement, Leon?
I lost pretty badly.
Yes.
But look, I mean, not just yelling carnage, but the fact that you're swinging at the person on your left and the person on your right, and like it's just all in brawl, and you go from all of a sudden having nothing on the table to having a massive army on the table to having nothing on the table again. Like it really seesaws, and it even though it felt like it played longer than the game said for us, it didn't feel long. It played quick.
Probably not by much, though, to be honest. I think per player it's like 15 minutes, and we probably played a little longer than an hour.
Yeah, look, there's two things I really wanted to mention. The first thing is it is great to have a game that has so many cards, but you use them all.
Yeah.
So you are burning and burning and burning. Like, you'll go through 5, maybe 10 or more cards every single turn. So you'll burn through your deck.
Yep.
The second thing that I wanted to say is that it's just great when a game does deliver on the box.
Yeah.
This is the game. It doesn't pretend to be heavy strategy. It's a big, stupid game about just land the smackdown on each other.
Yeah.
That's fine. And as I said to you, Leon, it's sort of in that same King of Tokyo kind of category where it just does what it says. It's that simple. Yeah. And you can play this with all ages. There's nothing that is, surprisingly violent or offensive at all. It's all just cartoony fun. Just laying the smackdown for half an hour.
It specifically said on the Kickstarter, like, for the whole family, you could just have utter mayhem. And I think, again, I really like this game as well. But a few points, just the fact that this game is so fun. You don't do heaps. It's not, there is some strategy to it, which is nice. But again, it's just fun. And at the end of the day, that's what we're here for with a lot of this stuff. It's nice to get your brain engaged from time to time, but you do just want to laugh. And one final thing that was on the Kickstarter that I didn't get, that I'm now kicking myself after playing this game, is that there was a set of Carnage shot glasses.
Oh, get out of here.
And rules for a Carnage drinking game.
Oh, Carnage!
Which I have since got on the Facebook board game groups and gone, has anybody got them? Because I want them. Because if I can't get them from the Devil Pig website, I want to find them because I think that there's much fun to be had there. But it's worth a look.
So this has been Leon's community service announcement. If anyone does have those shot glasses,
yes,
please email dicemencometh@gmail.com.
Yeah, I'm not saying send it me for free. I'll probably, I'll say your name on the radio. That's, that's worth lots.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for that, Leon. Let's get to a song.
Ah, that was a bit more appropriate for Carnage now, wasn't it?
It sounded like he was singing Devil Pig.
That's a very good point, actually. Either way, that was Monkey by Blackstone from the Sun on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and the Dice Men Cometh this week brought to you by the Good Games Hobart and their Endgame Cafe. Not just for board gaming, but also pool, pinball, arcade games, and Xboxes with comfy chairs. I was playing Gears of War with a cider in my hand only 20 minutes ago.
Very nice.
Indeed.
All right, now, the big news.
Blah, 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 blah.
On the board gaming front this week or the last week and a bit.
Mark had a shower.
Hey!
Oh,
no, it's not June yet.
No.
It's not
financial year.
It's not time for a shower yet.
Board Game Geek Golden Geek Awards. So they're annual awards voted on by
people
who frequent the Board Game Geek
not animals,
website. So it is, it's a people's choice, but they're a particular brand of people. And so as you can imagine, they're people like us. But as you can imagine, the results tend to skew different ways. And then there's a lot of conversations about, I can't believe that got in, and why didn't this get in, and this didn't even get a mention. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the conversations and a bit about the awards themselves.
Fantastic.
But the conversations are all passionate, which is the most important thing.
Of course. Now, quite a few games got a lot of nominations. Would you believe the game that got the most nominations was actually the game that I've just sold this week, Arkham Horror the Card Game, which got 7 nominations across the different categories. However, I guess it does have a bit of an advantage because when you look at the categories, you've got Board Game of the Year, you've got two-player game of the year.
Well, yeah.
You've got artwork and presentation. You've got card game. You've got cooperative game. You've got an expansion, a family game, most innovative game, party game, print-and-play game, solo game, strategy game, and thematic game. War games, which tend to be beasts unto themselves. Best podcast. Let's just not even go there.
did we win that again?
And best board game app. But so clearly with all those categories, if you don't happen to be a card game that can be played cooperatively and solo and with two players,
you got no shot.
There's quite a few categories that you're not able to get in. So I guess in Arkham Horror, the card game's favour, it is a card game, obviously, because it says it right in the name.
Yeah.
It can be played with one, two, or if you've got two sets, three or four, but it also is cooperative, but it also can be played solo.
And it's also Arkham, so there's a hell of a lot of theme that goes
Yeah. But
and so, it's also, you know, really good, which yeah. actually helps the situation.
Yeah, absolutely right. So, look, it covered off a lot of categories. And so out of its seven nominations, it won one category, which was card game. So it was voted the best card game. And it was runner-up in another three categories.
I'm sure you'll get to it. It didn't win best two-player or best cooperative.
It was a runner-up in best two-player. It was a runner-up in best cooperative. It won card game, as I said. It was also a runner-up in best solo game. It won one, runner-up three times. Let's compare that with Mansions of Madness, second edition, which got six nominations. So it was the second most nominated game. Now, again, it's a cooperative game, so it can fit into that category.
Yeah.
It's a thematic game, which not every game is a thematic game, although there's a lot of conversation about that topic. So anyway, it won, if I can find it here, it won, I'm sure it's best thematic game, but I've lost the piece of paper.
No, it didn't. It was a runner-up in best thematic game.
And I've got a page missing. I've got a page missing.
Well, oh, you've got 75 pages there.
I've got a lot of
pages. Did it win
pages.
Best cooperative then, surely?
It was runner-up in thematic game.
It was also runner-up in cooperative game.
It was runner-up in cooperative game.
I'm pretty sure it didn't win anything,
I can't find thematic. No, no, you're right, it didn't. It was a runner-up in only a couple. And another one, Mechs versus Minions, which, you know, there's a lot of talk about this one, and it was nominated in six, or runner-up, it was awarded in six categories. But again, it was runner-up for artwork and presentation, and it was the winner of best cooperative game, but it didn't feature. Whereas,
blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I don't know what that sound
is. Did you do the worst drum solo?
Yeah, I know. Like,
the game that everyone is talking about on Board Game Geek, whether for the right or the wrong reason, of course, is Scythe.
Yeah.
Scythe had six nominations. So same as Mansions of Madness, same as Mechs versus Minions. But how many categories did Scythe win?
All of them.
Nine.
It won five out of the six it was nominated in, and the sixth one it was runner-up.
That's not bad.
You can't get much more of a clean sweep than that. So, of course, it was the big one, the board game of the year.
Yep.
It was the winner of artwork and best artwork and presentation.
Yeah.
It was the winner of the best solo game. It was the winner of the best strategy game.
Yeah.
Scratching ahead. The winner of the best thematic game.
No.
Scratching ahead again.
Yeah, no.
And what did I say? It was runner-up in the best in most innovative game.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So before we move on, let's just talk about a couple of those.
I didn't even know you could play it solo for a start. So well done it. And I'm going to take a stab and say the Arkham card game is probably better to play solo than that. That's just my stab in the dark.
Well, the other thing was the other runner-up in solo game was Terraforming Mars.
Yeah. Don't you guys know solo, Mark? You are the solo expert. Like, what I really like, now, I have not played Scythe as a solo, but what I really like about the Stonemaier games is that they create that whole automata deck. So it's a whole deck that is there to simulate and allow a solo player to play and not have that same experience over and over again. Mm. And I really like that there is so much investment by Stonemaier Games in being able to do that, because this game is a table hog, so I'm not surprised that when you've laid it out, there's just no room for other players to go and sit down at that table with you. Now, in terms of some of the other awards, I am in the Scythe bandwagon. Ooh. I really do like this game. Yes. I think, you know, you look at the artwork and presentation, and it does look damn lovely on the table. The art that Jakub, I can't even want to destroy his name, but
Jakub,
who did a fantastic job putting in that alternate Europe 1920s style art, looks beautiful, and it suits the style of the game.
Yeah, and look, I won't argue it's not a very, very attractive game, but...
But?
It is a game...
It is, yes.
...with a theme.
Correct.
But is it an... Do you really get engaged in that theme? Because there was all this talk when it came out about, oh, but it's a strategy game, and it's a role-playing game, and the storytelling is in those cards where you make choices.
Well, that's the RPG sort of side of it, for lack of a better term. That's those encounter cards, yeah?
Yeah, but I don't... But the story is not persistent. You make a decision and then you forget about that you ever made that decision. And compare that to something like, and I still haven't played it, I'm so jealous of you guys, Star Wars Rebellion for a thematic game, or for goodness sake, that's Mansions of Madness.
Yeah, no, they're fair.
Like,
point.
Those games are dripping with theme.
Yeah, I might concede that point.
Okay, so you...
But
know,
I don't want to.
This is the hype bandwagon. And now, strategy. Okay, now, is Scythe really a strategic game?
Yes. Well, what else would it be if it wasn't?
It's tactical. I wouldn't say it's strategic.
I disagree completely.
And look, I mean, I feel like when you compare it to something like Terraforming Mars, I think that's a way better strategic game.
Was that the runner-up?
Yes.
It was, yes.
I would argue that, because Terraforming Mars has a bit more luck to it in terms of the card draw. I think with Scythe, it's about that maximising each one of your turns. You've got the upper and the lower actions that you can take.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, you know, a long-term strategy in terms of how you choose to upgrade and develop your little civilization out of the five or seven now with the Invaders from Afar expansion.
Yep.
So, look, in terms of an overall strategy, mine failed, so clearly... Yours worked, so you had a strategy mark and you beat me.
Well, even though I completely forgot it till you just mentioned it, Star Wars Rebellion in the strategy category, I'd say would be very strong as well.
Yeah, it's not there.
Not even in there. I mean,
really?
You know, in terms of strategy, it goes Scythe was the winner, and then you had runner-up with Terraforming Mars, and runner-up to that again was Great Western Trail, which none of us have played, so I'd love to have a go.
Apparently very good.
You know, from a strategy point of view, moving cattle seems to be quite a strategic thing to do in all accounts, so on the board I can imagine that would be true as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, Star Wars Rebellion... You know, once you invest your 4 or 5 hours in this game, and, you know, we have had one of the closest things to a table flip moment with the painful, painful experience of playing against Trent in this game, where he was the most miserable rebellion that has existed ever in the Star Wars universe.
So spewing I wasn't there. That sounded so much fun.
Well, that was the day where I played Star Wars Rebellion twice in one day.
That's right, you played with me that day and then played it that night.
That was a long day, that one.
And so, look, Star Wars Rebellion did feature, as I said, heavily in this and was one of the two runners-up in Board Game of the Year. So Scythe was the winner of that category. Terraforming Mars, yes. And Star Wars Rebellion were the two runners-up.
Terraforming Mars, I just want to say that a bit later.
Yeah, sure.
Just because I'm sick of it. All the rest of you going...
And I don't want to come across as a Scythe hater. I'm not a Scythe hater. I just think it's relatively simplistic, and that's why I don't put it in the strategy game category, because I think, yes, there's a lot of choices to make, but I think it's relatively simplistic... what you do. But look, I think hats off to Jamie Stegmaier and Stegmaier Games. It's beautifully produced. They run an amazing Kickstarter. They got plenty of copies of it out there, and that was one of the biggest complaints with some of the other games that people felt like should have performed better but didn't. Terraforming Mars is a classic example, is that there was such limited supply, not enough people got to play them to be able to then comment and vote and drive them up.
Yes.
I think there are a few others. I think Mechs versus Minions might have been a bit of a short run. Captain Sonar, Clank. There were a couple of others. I think Captain Sonar had 4 nominations and it won the most innovative game. And we haven't had a chance to play that one.
No, look, innovative game, I think, is an interesting category because, Captain Sonar, it has a hell of a lot of unique mechanics, you know, up to 4 players on either side controlling rival submarines trying to basically play a bigger game of battleship. I'm trying to destroy your sub before you destroy mine.
Mm-hmm.
But then the runner-up, was Scythe, and I'm not sure... really what Scythe did that was particularly innovative at all, to be perfectly honest. It's got a whole bunch of mechanics that you've seen over and over again. Again, you know, whereas you look at the other runner-up, which is Vast, the Crystal Caverns, and that, again, I think justifies its position
there. That's right. That's four-player, but it's all asymmetric.
Yeah, so someone's playing the dragon, and someone's playing the knight, and someone's playing the goblins, and someone's playing the cave, for example. Yeah. And, you know, that sounds like a truly innovative experience, regardless of whether it works or not, because I've certainly heard good things and not so good. But, yeah, I think possibly the innovative side of things is where Scythe could have been given a bit of a, I don't know, it could have been replaced with something else, I think, in that category.
Yeah, and look, another one I want to, so, I just want to finish off on Scythe. Right. So I'm not a Scythe hater,
but you are.
I think you're right, Garth. I think they've brought a whole bunch of things together. Maybe, I don't know if it's the first game that's done that. Certainly maybe it's done the mechs, the minis, the Euro-type resource management game, the role-playing bit, which for me just isn't there in those cards. It's a lovely package, and hats off to them for the playtime, because that would have to be one of the very, very, very few games where we, who are known for playing two or three times longer than the published game time, actually finished almost spot on the game time.
Not quite the hour, 115 minutes it says, but pretty close.
Yeah, but I understand what Mark means. And the reason why things like this happen, like this being in the innovative category, stuff like that, that's what irritates people when you just go, that just doesn't make any sense. Something very similar like a few years ago was when the movie The Martian won a Golden Globe for the best comedy when it's not a comedy. And people just went, oh, that's good, and started hating on that film. The fact is, it's a really good film, but it ain't a comedy.
Yeah,
so because of that alone, and like something like, yeah, putting this in innovative and go, really? Okie dokie.
And I think in terms of strategy, we've also got to compare it to the Kennerspiel. You know, we've talked about it last year particularly, where the caliber or the strategic nature of the games that are nominated for the Kennerspiel, which is the gamer's game, is just not at that same complexity level that we've probably seen in years past. So, I think fantastic work to Scythe to get a game that absolutely smashed it on Kickstarter, that is an accessible game that delivers on its playtime, that also probably introduced a lot of gamers to the mechanics of a lot of other games as well in terms of resource and worker placement and adding cards and blah, 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 blah. I think it's a game that should rightfully deserve a lot of prizes.
And just finally, it's Stonemaier, and they're great, and they deserve everything they get.
Correct.
Yeah, look, they do produce a very high-quality game. Now, look, let's take a pause.
Right.
We'll just hop off the Scythe bandwagon for a minute, take a very brief break, and when we come back, let's talk about some more of the games that featured in the awards.
Growl Games, great Australian publisher who we know and love. G'day, Dave. We wanted to take a couple of seconds here to talk about how awesome they are and a brand new project they have on Kickstarter. It's yet another Rainer Canizia game that they're updating. Mark, what was the last one that they did?
Medici.
With awesome art by
Vincent Dutre.
He's the guy who did the art for Lewis and Clark.
And Medici. And now...
Medici the card game, and now King's Road.
King's Road, which is the re-implementation of Rainer Canizia's Imperium. It's a little area control game. It's for 2 to 5 players, age 10 and up. Takes about 30 minutes to play. Have a look at it for the art alone, deserving of your cash.
And it's only a quick Kickstarter campaign, I think 20 days. It actually funded within the first 2 days.
So you're going to get it. It's not one of these, oh, we're going to get it. These guys know what they're doing, and you're definitely going to get this game, and it's going to be good, and look pretty.
Look at their back catalogue in terms of all those Micheline games. Every one of those has been fantastic. All or almost all of those games you can get on their web store.
Including their, one of the last Kickstarters they did from 2016, Donut Drive Through, which is now getting a mass release on April 5, and that'll be available through their website eventually as well, I imagine, which is growlgameshop.com.au.
Their website's actually really good, and I'm glad, because there's lots of stuff on there that I want to buy, because they're very famous for their mic line, but what they've got coming up in the next couple of months is these little games from Japan from Oink Games. Two particular that I want to talk about. One's called Deep Sea Adventure that I played last year at BorderCon. Great little filler game about divers diving down and you have to try and take care of your oxygen, but you want to go further because there's better treasure down there. Excellent little filler game. And another great little game called Insider, which is just a simple kind of like charades. You've got to guess a word type game. But then once you've guessed that word, everyone has to then team up
and guess who was trying to sabotage the people from winning that game that they just played. So basically, these Oink games are like the Japanese mic line, and they're all getting released at once. Like, 8 games are all getting released on their website in March and February. And they've also got one other game on there that I want to quickly talk about, which is called Hanamikoji. I've probably butchered that completely, but it's a 2-player game. I recently saw on a video on the internet, someone by the name of Sam Healy said it is the best 2-player game he's ever played.
Oh my god!
Which is pretty impressive because he's played a game or 7.
All of this and more on growlgameshop.com.au, plus an exclusive deal for listeners to the Dice Men.
Yeah, you put in a promo code.
So last week, Mark, you told us a horrible story about what's happening to the good doctor.
I don't think we need to go through all of
that. Okay.
The most important part is we must release Reiner.
Okay, so this is the promo code that we're making you. It's release Reiner with R's.
Somebody please spell it.
R-E-L-E-A-S-E-R-E-I-N-E-R. Release Reiner.
Right. So you put that into the website, you will get 15% off your order.
And that's one word.
One word. My God, we've made this difficult.
15% off.
15% off on the store, as well as if you spend over $100 Australian or $125 New Zealand, you will get free shipping as well.
GrailGamesShop.com.au. We love Grail Games, and we love you too.
Mwah.
You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 with tonight's episode proudly sponsored by Good Games and their new cafe, the Endgame Cafe, which has plenty of in-store gaming space. And it also hosts a lot of regular game nights, which you can also book the whole cafe for a private function should you need a table or more.
But I don't reckon there's any biscotti there.
Oh, I don't know.
None of that rubbish.
Leon gets some biscotti.
Yes, during the break I may have mentioned that the biscottis are absolute rubbish, and I stand by that.
All right.
Look, before we go on with the Golden Geek Awards, I want to do a huge Aussie, oi, shout out to one man who's holding up that Aussie flag in the Golden Geek Awards, and that is good friend of the show and brother to
to a better friend of the show,
Grail Games, David Harding, is Phil Walker Harding.
Yeah.
Who got a runner-up in the best card game with Sushi Go Party, and also got a runner-up, he was robbed, in the best family game with Imhotep. Now, I think particularly to have Imhotep get up in family game, Codenames Pictures was the one that won that, which I think, meh.
In family, I'd say Sushi Go's a better family game than those two for a start.
But, I mean, Imhotep with a fairly small print run, didn't have a lot of press apart from the fact that it was in the Spiel des Jahres.
yeah, that little thing, yeah.
And, I mean, and it's up against Quadropolis was the other runner-up from that game company that produces all those amazing-looking games.
Days of Wonder.
Days of Wonder.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, for a little guy from Australia waving that flag, Phil Walker-Harding has done an awesome job there.
Do you think he's got the nickname The Bridesmaid now?
I don't know.
Doesn't quite to be first.
I like to think of him as a little Aussie battler. He's in there punching against the big guys, and he's starting to make a few dents in their kneecaps.
Well, he has got Bear Park or Baron Park coming out for a German release soon, which is a game about having a bear in your park.
Ooh!
Which does feature koalas, even though they're not bears. All right, Mark, keep going.
Yeah, now, look, and another shout-out to a great friend of the show, GMT Games, with their war games, because, look, although not a lot of people in our hobby are into war games, we had a foray into the coin games.
We
did. Of course, we talked about at BorderCon, Garth, you and I tried Falling Sky, the Gaelic Revolt Against Caesar, which is the Asterix and Obelix in a box.
Yep.
It won the best war game. Nice. And one of the runners-up was another coin game, one of the ones that's not done by Volker Runke, Liberty or Death, the American Insurrection, which is, of course, about the American War of Independence in 1776, but sort of seen, if you like, from the opposite side where the British are like the regulars,
yeah,
and then the terrorists, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. The terrorists, if you like, are played by the American revolutionaries.
Yeah, well, I think look, having a GMT and particularly a coin game be nominated and then win that category is not really surprising, because I certainly find the coin game series mixes wargaming with board gaming a lot better than, yes, almost any other style. So, you know, it makes it a bit more accessible for board gamers who are curious to get into wargaming, and it makes it easier for wargamers to bridge the divide into board gaming. So, look, I think justifiably two really good games, and, you know, for us, we've only played Falling Sky, and it was great, and I won.
Yeah, they're a lovely middle ground, even though they take 7 bisquillion hours.
Well, ours took 5 hours, and we played a short version.
Well, I read the rule. Sorry, I had the rules read to me of Virgin Queen, and I wanted to jump out of it. I left before we started playing.
But Virgin Queen isn't a coin game.
Oh, they all
just
look
to
alike.
Be clear, it's like a 5 or 6 player version of Twilight Struggle, basically. Speaking of Twilight Struggle, there's a segue, Garth.
Yeah.
So, best board game app.
Mm-hmm.
The winner was, of course, and I have just picked this up just recently, Twilight Struggle. It is a very, very, very faithful reproduction of the board game. I've only played it a couple of times, but beautiful production, and you really do feel like you're playing the board game. I've asked you to pick this one up, Garth, so we can play it.
Oh, fantastic.
There is just, and I said the same to Carl, Carnage Carl.
Yes.
I guess the price tag might be holding people back a bit on this one, because I think it's $10 or $12, which for a game app is...
It's up there.
...tend to be pricey, but I tell you what, if you're on the fence and you're like an iPad or tablet user, or you can get this one for Steam as well, Twilight Struggle is an amazing app.
Yeah, for me, I think I'd definitely go down the Steam path, just because having the, you know, in my case, I've got the 27-inch Mac at home, to have that board showing in its not quite full size, that's going to be a much more experience, experience than the little iPad version.
I really do hope that it is $10 and not $12, because at $10, they're going to sell twice as many than $12, because $12 is a stupid price point. Anyway, moving on.
But if it was $11.99.
That's still stupid compared to 10.
So, best expansion.
You haven't done the best app justice.
Oh, sorry, with the runners-up?
Yeah, purely because this is, as someone who plays a lot of app games...
Yes. As the toilets playing man.
Having a runner-up in Mansions of Madness, I just don't agree with, because it's really a companion. It's not a game in itself. It is a way to play the board game.
Should almost be a different category.
Well,
so board
I
games
guess,
without.
Yeah, I guess that's right. What is the definition of the category?
Yeah, so.
I'll read you out the list of all the ones that were nominated.
Thanks.
So you had Agricola, All Creatures Big and Small. So that's the two-player version. You got Baseball Highlights 2045, Castles of Mad King Ludwig,
mm-hmm.
Cult Express,
yay.
Lanterns, Paperback, Patchwork,
ooh.
Pathfinder, which how can it not be up there? Although it's been out a while now, I know.
How? They did an update 2 days ago.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Now, the description of the update, Leon, now this is going to be a little test for you. Right. The description of the update on the App Store said, added a privacy policy. That was it. Okay. Do you want to know how big that update was?
A gig or two?
650 megabytes to add a privacy policy.
They must have added some extra stuff, like some card art or something. Maybe what they're doing sneakily in the background is they're uploading some of the stuff for
Trump
the new,
to spy on us.
The new through
I'm
our
sure
iPads,
that, I'm sure that's already
through
yeah.
our microwaves.
For perhaps for the next base set, because surely it's got to be time for the, I can't remember the name, but it's the priority one.
Yeah.
It was the next base set.
I just think it's added in some term and condition that they own your souls forever. Basically how it is. Anyway, keep going.
But you're right. All those other ones are actually games, and the Mansions of Madness isn't a game. Although, you know, I mean, the app is a huge part of that
game.
Yeah,
look, it is, and it is a fantastic asset to make Mansions of Madness essentially DM-less, but... Yeah, you're not going to go and get a Mansions of Madness app if you haven't got the board game.
Although, if you could play Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition on your iPad and by yourself and you didn't need other people around, or play it on your iPad with other friends around the world that are on their iPad, ha ha ha.
Yeah, but it's just...
But it's not. It's but not. That would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's just not.
So until that happens, it's not going to allow to win.
So I'm going to... I should comment.
Okay, no, that's okay. And look, Leon, I thought I'd get you to chime in here because here's something that you might know something about.
Chime.
For a change. So, the computer game of the year.
Chime.
Okay. Now, as someone who doesn't know much about computer games, because I'm still dreaming about the follow-up to Skyrim.
Yes.
You'll
be waiting a while.
I know. The winner of the game of the year, I was shocked about this, was Civilization VI.
That doesn't surprise me at all on this site in the slightest.
Yeah, and because, I mean, for me, I thought that Overwatch, which was one of the runners-up, would win hands down, because it just seems like for the last 12 months, everyone's been talking about Overwatch. There's been so much, well, I guess it's maybe my focus, cosplay about Overwatch. but, you know, everyone's talking Overwatch.
Overwatch won many a Game of the Year award on actual video game sites and stuff like that. But Civ 6 was, again, they haven't made a bad Civ game in a while. They've changed some things. Some people like them, some people don't.
Yeah.
But it is still, you know, it's still Civilization, which is good. So if for this site, based off if you like playing board games, video game of the year.
Yeah,
seems as good as anything else.
Yeah. And it is the closest to a board game, you know, video game. It is that perfect amalgam. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
It does make sense. Now, talking about stuff that we don't regularly talk about and we know nothing about.
Sorry, what were some of the other ones, just to refresh my memory? Do you have the rest of them there, the video game stuff?
No.
Okay.
Civilization 3.
I'm just trying to think what my game of the year would have been last year. I can't think of it.
No, because all the rest of the stuff I've got is just board games.
Okay, that's
fine. But role-playing games.
Yes.
The winner of that was Seventh Sea, the second edition. Now, do any of you guys know anything about this role-playing game? I had a big quick read, and it sounds really interesting, but I hadn't heard of it.
Maybe this could be your time, Mark. You could grab that and become that game master you've always wanted to be.
Maybe I better read up about it.
Let's start.
Of course, we're almost out of time, but of course, congratulations to Shut Up and Sit Down, the podcast, who won the best podcast, and the runners-up were Rado Talks Through and Ludgeology. So who knew that Rado had a podcast?
And the Dice Man Cometh.
we didn't make the shortlist, I'm afraid, chaps.
And then the Dice Man Cometh.
Yeah, come on now, people.
Maybe next time. Look, one I missed out earlier, the best expansion.
Hey.
So Seven Wonders Duel Pantheon. We still haven't even played Seven Wonders Tool, chaps.
I've got it at home.
Yeah. Did I say Seven Wonders Tool?
You certainly did. We've played that, but we haven't played Seven Wonders Duel yet.
That's Trent's nickname, isn't it? the runners-up for that one, two games we have played, Dead of Winter, The Long Night, and Time Stories, A Prophecy of Dragons.
We need to talk about that
game. Which we just played on the weekend, and I cannot wait to talk about that. Even the non-spoilery version we had so much fun with that, and I've just posted up an Instagram photo today of us, non-spoilery as much as possible with that.
You spoiled it a bit with having Leon's head in it, though.
But look, I think, you know, if you wanted to point someone in the direction of games they should play, then really the board games of the year, the ones that were nominated, as Arkham Horror, Captain Sona, Clank, I'm really interested to get that to the table. I've been trying to track down a copy. Again, it's just in too short supply. The Colonists, A Feast for Odin, Great Western Trail, Inish, the new version of the Manhattan Project, Mansions of Madness, Mechs vs. Minions, Quadropolis, Scythe, Star Wars Rebellion, and Terraforming Mars.
It's a good game night.
There's a great shortlist to start someone on
that.
You
couldn't even read all those rule books in a night.
You guys got any more comments to make about these awards before we shut off the show?
The only thing I wanted to say was it's great. The four of us who do the Dice Men have played probably about 90% of those games, which is a great achievement, guys, because
for us,
we speak about a lot of the games just don't get to Australia in time. Obviously, this is the 2016 one, so they've been out in some cases for over a year. But we've done a pretty good job. We're actually able to talk about some stuff that we know about a little bit.
Just a tiny bit, not that too much.
Yeah. So, Mark, is that it? Is that us? Can we go out of here and play some games?
I think that is about that it for us.
Fantastic. So for anyone who's interested, please check us out on dicemencometh.com. Jump on our Facebook, jump on our Instagram and look at all of Mark's pretty pictures. We've got Twitter. There's all the social medias. You know what to do.
We'd love some iTunes reviews. If you want to give us a 5-star review on iTunes, it'd be fabulous. And, of course, don't forget our great sponsor, Good Games and the Endgame Cafe, because who doesn't love pizza and a frosty beverage when you're playing your games? We'll be back next week to talk about more games and all the other fun things that we've been doing. But we'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Good Games Hobart and their new Endgame Cafe. Find us on dicemencometh.com, Facebook, Instagram, and if you like what you hear, please support us on Patreon.